Hello out there and welcome to episode 71 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are trial lawyers focusing in the areas of nursing home abuse and neglect in the state of Georgia. And we are your co-hosts for this episode of the podcast. As this episode goes to air, it is June 4th. And let me tell you, we are... Do you hear something? Do you hear anything?
I can only imagine.
You hear that?
What is that?
That is middle age knocking.
Yeah.
Middle age is knocking on the door to Will's life because
in eight days, just a week.
In just a short period of time.
I will turn 40 years old.
40 years old. Mm-hmm. Middle aged man. Age. June 12th, 1978.
Mm-hmm.
Bread costs a nickel a loaf.
I don't think it did.
The most watched TV
show. A house cost $10.
The most watched TV show was The $6 Million Man.
That's probably true. And Reese's Pieces came out.
No.
Yes, in 1978.
1984.
Nope, 1978.
It came out with E.T.
Do you want to put money on this?
I almost think that I do want to put money. You're talking about Reese's, not Reese's Cups.
Reese's Pieces.
Reese's Pieces.
Yeah.
That was...
1978.
I'm going to put... We'll put lunch at what's not... It's not LS Tech anymore.
El Ponce.
El Ponce.
Okay.
Lunch at El Ponce on the fact
and,
that...
And the main thing is, it's who's going to be right. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So... I think that I'm right, but we'll look that up. Gene, while during this episode,
get that
don't tell us though.
Yeah.
And then when we go off camera, that's when we'll figure this out. But anyway, it's another special episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast because we have a guest and let me just say this. One of our listeners, Jerry Wilson, very nice woman. She pointed out to me several months ago now. That we are a male-dominated podcast. We have yet to have a single female appear as a guest on this podcast.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Okay.
It's just dudes.
I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. So this episode is it breaks that spell. Who do we have on the podcast today, Will?
Well, today we have Robin Grant. She is the Director of Public Policy and Advocacy at the National Consumer Voice for Quality of Long-Term Care. That's Consumer Voice is the organization. In this capacity, she is responsible for leading the development and implementation of the Consumer Voice's public policy agenda in growing and mobilizing the grassroots network to support the organization's policy work. Before joining Consumer Voice, she served as the long-term care policy director at United Senior Action, an Indiana senior advocacy organization, and a consultant with the National Long-Term Care Ombudsman Resource Center. She has a master's in social work with a specialization in aging. Robin was the Indiana State Long-Term Care Ombudsman for 8 years and president of the National Association of State Long-Term Care Ombudsman programs for 2 terms. Now, the way that I know her specifically is at the National Conference for Consumer Voice back in November of 2017. She is the individual that gave the surprise tongue lashing to the 2 CMS workers who came to the conference. It wasn't really directed at them. It was directed at CMS, but she had them on stage. They were about to talk about CMS and CMS's new policies about not really implementing the new rules or fines. And while she had them up there, she read them the Riot Act, and it was a surprise to most people there. Certainly a surprise to the 2 CMS employees, but it was amazing. And so we are very happy to have her She is a staunch advocate for the elderly and for nursing home residents. We're very happy to have her on the podcast.
We are. She's going to be talking about the dangers of bed sores. I'm sorry.
Bed rails.
Bed rails.
Another
B word. We're going to have her talking about the dangers of bed rails. Robin, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Robin, we want to talk to you about an issue that we know is extremely important now, and that has to do with bed rails. And I think that this is a little counterintuitive for a lot of people, just because it seems like bed rails are a safety feature, but they're also something that's causing injury. So can you talk a little bit about that dichotomy there?
Happy to, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I think most people, when they think about bed rails, think that, wow, that's a way to protect somebody from falling, rolling out of bed. Or if someone perhaps with dementia, it's a way to prevent them from getting out of bed. Perhaps an individual is having trouble walking and needs assistance, and would just get out of bed and try walking on their own. And so I think people tend to think that, well, if you put the bed rails up, that will stop them from getting out, and so that will keep them safe. But the truth is that bed rails are incredibly dangerous. Instead of keeping people safe, I mean, they can result in serious injury and even death. And here's what happens. People can get caught between the rails, so there's a risk of entrapment. So a resident who wants to get out of bed may come up against the bed rail. They may try to go through the bed rail because there are openings between the different parts of the rail. So they may try to go through, they may try to go under, they could be doing this at the rail, or they try to go over the footboard, and they get caught, and they strangle and suffocate. And if they're not saved in time, they can, in fact, die. So there's entrapment. So between the rails, but there's also instances when people get caught between the rail and the mattress. So the individual can roll into this gap if the bed mattress it doesn't fit right. And, often the individual may be too frail, too weak, whatever, to change position. And then the mattress presses against the person's chest and prevents them from breathing, and then they suffocate. So entrapment is a serious issue. Falls are another one. So this folks who are confused or have dementia are particularly at risk of falls, because if you have dementia and you want to get out of bed and the bed rails are blocking your way, people frequently try to climb over the rails. And what happens then is that can lead to a fall. They're climbing up over the bed rails, and the fall that they take then is higher, actually, than the fall if they had just fallen out of bed. So it's actually more dangerous. It falls from over the bed rail, actually more dangerous than just even a regular fall. So while one part of our brain wants to say, oh, they keep us safe, it's really important to realize that is not, in fact.
Robin, what are the factors that a healthcare provider should consider when deciding to weigh the safety of preventing wandering or elopement with bed rails versus the dangers that bed rails actually, when the danger from the bed rail is less great than the individual getting up and walking away? How is that decision made? What's the analysis?
Well, the first line of the first approach is to try other alternatives first. And in fact, we have revised federal regulations that went into effect in October 2016, which require alternatives to be tried first. So the facility would be responsible for doing a really good assessment of the resident, and then looking at how that care can be individualized. So finding other ways to keep somebody safe other than a bed rail. And often that comes about by really knowing the individual. When I say individualized care, that's, you know, knowing the person's needs, their habits, their daily routines, and trying to meet those. So, for example, if you know that Mrs. Thomas always gets up at 2 a.m. And she has dementia to go to the bathroom, then part of what you do to provide care for her is to make sure you have staff there at that time to anticipate her needs. So part of the process is to go through and try these things first, and then if they don't work, it's really trying to decide. So if Mrs. Thomas falls out of bed, you know, how serious is that? What's the risk of that compared to if she has this fall over the bed rail, or you know, if she gets trapped in between the rails. So it's doing a risk-benefit analysis and sharing that with the resident, if possible, and certainly the resident's represented, yeah, and making sure they give informed consent.
One of the things I've seen done, and I don't remember if you and I discussed this. I used to be a CNA and worked in nursing homes before I became an attorney.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, back in the early 2000s, so like 2000 to 2008, and it was in a lot of rural areas, so they didn't have a lot of technology. I think that right when I was leaving, we started getting more bed alarms. I have noticed that bed alarms, the staff tend to get bed alarm deafness from those because they hear them go off so much that it doesn't really become something that you immediately pay attention to, which is unfortunate because that could be a good alternative. But I also noticed that a couple of times, and I always thought I liked this, if it works out, they would put the bed almost all the way to the ground and have a mattress, or not a mattress, but a pad on either side so that if they rolled out, they wouldn't really get hurt. I don't think that works for every room or every resident, but it certainly seemed like it was something that worked for that resident.
I'd like to speak to that if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, your point about bed alarms is a really good one. I think when the effort to reduce the use of side rails started, people thought that bed alarms were the answer. Because you think, you know, there is that sensor pad, and so if the resident moves, the idea is obviously the alarm goes off and somebody comes and helps. But here's what we found. As you said, there's alarm fatigue. There's so many going off, they get ignored. But there's even more than that. Usually, by the time, unless a staff person is really close by the time they get there, the resident usually has already fallen. Another issue is that we see that the sound really exacerbates the agitation of residents with dementia. And in fact, you've probably noticed this yourself, it will drive you crazy.
Absolutely.
Hearing an alarm, I mean, that is no way to live, so that's impacting quality of life. But we've also seen that residents become so afraid of making the slightest move because they're afraid the alarm will go off and upset them and others, that they just remain rigid and frozen in place. And so that, you know, they're terrified. And by not moving at all that actually ends up impairing their own mobility, makes them more at risk for falls. So there's a lot of work now being, a lot of folks are recognizing that, you know, bed alarms really aren't really a good way to go necessarily. But your point about lowering the bed is an excellent one. We're seeing that being used a lot. So you get a bed that can be raised and lowered, and you keep it as low to the floor, you know, as you can. You've probably already also seen mats. You can put mats on the side of the bed, so that you cushion the fall if it does, if the person does fall. There are body pillows that can be used to, you know, protect folks from rolling out of bed or to aid in positioning. I've also seen like trapezes that, so if somebody needs something, a bar to help them reposition themselves, they sort of hang from the ceiling and the person can grab them and use them to help reposition. So there are ways to keep folks safe without using the bed rail. Again, a big key to this is that individualized care and good staff training.
So, Robin, I mean, is it fair to say that there should be no reason at all to use bed rails in any circumstance?
If at all possible, yeah. I mean, the regulations don't say you can't use side rails. They do say that they have to, you have to have tried alternatives, and they can only be used if there's, to treat a medical symptom. And then only, you know, you do try to use them for the least amount of time. So the use of them should be infrequent.
Exactly.
But they're not completely prohibited.
Gotcha. So Robin, let's do this. A lot of our audience consists of persons who have loved ones in skilled nursing facilities and nursing homes. Can place yourself into the shoes of one of those listeners. They walk into the nursing home to visit their loved one and they notice bed rails up. What's the next thing that they should do?
They should find a staff person, maybe the aide who is who's been caring for their loved one, and just say, you know, I've noticed, I just came in and I noticed that there are side rails up on my mother's bed. Can you tell me what's going on? Can you tell me why they're being used? So start by just, getting information and asking, what's going on. Because if you find out why they're being used, then families often, they know their loved one so well that they may be able to make some suggestions. So maybe, their loved one was getting agitated or getting out of bed a lot, and they decided to put them up to keep their loved one in bed. So the family member can say, well, can we talk? I am concerned about their use. I'm aware that, side rails can be extremely dangerous. And I know you wouldn't want anything to happen to my mom. So can we talk about what we can do other than using bed rails?
Yeah, because I think, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and then this is a really good conversation to have at a care plan meeting.
Exactly. I was going to say the family should be involved in the care plan from the get-go, and a bed rail decision is definitely a care plan decision.
Absolutely, and now it is a decision which by regulation has to be with informed consent. So if your mother is cognitively impaired, has dementia, and you are the decision maker, those bed rails should not have gone up without you knowing and giving consent and having all the information presented to you about the risks and whatever benefits there may be. So that should not happen.
And so is that regulation one from 2016?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Is it being implemented or is it being delayed?
That's an excellent question. This one is being implemented.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I think it's important for folks to know that the regulations related to bed rails really have been strengthened, and I believe are definitely an improvement. There has to be, as I said, alternatives have to be tried. There has to be informed consent, and facilities are required to make sure that that they're installed correctly, that the mattress fits the bed, because that's how many problems can arise when somebody gets caught between the mattress and the bed rail. So they have to make sure that it's the proper mattress. That creates lots of problems, and they have to conduct regular inspections. So the regs are vastly improved.
One of the things I remember seeing, because I worked in some pretty rural counties, in addition to some larger cities, but in some of the really rural counties in nursing homes that I am positive have been shut down by now, they clearly inherited hospital beds from a defunct hospital. And so, you know, hospital beds that were probably used in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, they're so old that these bed rails barely worked. The mattress, they were just basically putting stuff together to get bodies in there to charge CMS. And I think that can be a problem, too. It's just very bad beds, bad bed rails themselves.
Well, that actually, I have a question about that then, Robin. I'm not saying that you're an expert in the manufacture of these things, but are there different, in your experience, are there different types of bed rails, and are there any that are more inherently dangerous than others?
I am not an expert in the different types. The ones I have seen the most usually are with hospital beds.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so the newer ones are certainly much better than the ones I think that you described.
Yes.
Having seen in these rural areas. Sometimes. Rarely, though, there may actually be rails. There are portable bed rails that sometimes are used, although rarely. Those I would certainly I find are more problematic, I think, than the hospital.
Definitely seen those because you've got that little metal push pin. I don't know. Yeah, I think you know what I'm talking about, Rob. You connect something and that little metal push pin goes in a hole like this, and you've got to push those out and
you
take
can lose
them out.
Skin.
Those were made for hospitals that had no intention of putting somebody with dementia or other issues like that in them. I mean, it was like a 1970s hospital where you're a grown up, you know what's going on, you're there because you got your kidney. Your adenoids taken out or something, and you're staying overnight, and now this nursing home has inherited it somehow. Those were absolutely horrible. I hope they need to ban the use of some of these different types of bed rails.
Yeah, I think from our perspective, needs to be much more done. I know this falls outside of Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, but the FDA really needs to have. They've produced guidelines, safety guidelines, and they talk about zones of entrapment, but there really are not, as far as I know, really good manufacturing requirements, if any, that actually have to be followed. So I think that's an area that where we need much better safety regulations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think Rob and I ever had a case. No, we've never had a case with a bed rail suffocation.
No, just the cases that we've had are a lot of times the call button is wedged or like tied to the bed rail.
But we did have a case, and I'll get to the point here. We did have a case where an individual got caught up in the window cord, the window blind cord. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that the FDA needs to get involved in these in the same way they would daycares or the production of cribs.
Yeah.
Because you have the same kinds of issues where people are, you know, essentially, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, but Mr. Johnson is 70 years old and he's, you know, 6'3", maybe he has dementia. In some ways that is no different than a 6'3" child walking around, and you need to have the same precautions. And you know, you're right. See, it can't all fall on CMS. There needs to be more done about it.
Yeah, in terms of the manufacturer, absolutely, yeah. And safety warnings on the bed rails, and I think there's a lot more that needs to be done in that arena. I mean, they've produced some materials for consumers, the FDA, so that's good, but I think there's more that needs to be done than education.
Robin, have you seen any trends in the statistics with bed rail injuries? Is, for example, entrapment a greater risk than, you know, the injuries from a fall from a greater height because they've rolled over the bed rail? Tell us a little bit about the stats behind the injuries of bed rails, if you can.
Well, first thing to know about the stats is that they're pretty crummy. So that's an issue right there. So I was sort of doing a little bit of research, and they are, so these incidents with bed rails are for the most part lumped together. So it's really hard to know exactly what happened. So for example, they take incidents of people being caught, trapped, entangled, or strangled, and lump them all together. So in one period of time from like 1985, which is a long time ago, up to 2009, they say there were 803 incidents of those. The New York Times did an article, and they looked at FDA data and lawsuits and nursing home surveys, and they said that since 1995, there have been about 550 deaths. I think the tracking of this is woefully inadequate, and we need better data, I think, to really know. But that speaks to another point, which is that, unfortunately, I would say the majority of these are probably not even reported.
Yeah, I could see that, too, that it's if the nursing home is not going to self-report on incidents like that. So, I mean...
Yeah, they're not going to report to the FDA or anything like that.
No, they're not.
Rarely. So we have no idea, really, the number of injuries, let alone, you know, deaths.
Yeah, and it's really not until, like, the New York Times or some private media gets involved. Thank God for them. And they have the resources to do this kind of research, because it's really difficult. You've got to get all this information and go through all these documents to sort out, you know, who is there an F tag for bed sores? I mean, bed rails?
Yeah, under a complaint investigation or any type of investigation where there's bed sores and there's an injury resulting from it, what's the F tag violation?
We keep saying bed sores. It's bed rails.
It's bed rails. A majority of our episodes and a majority of our cases involve bed sores. We have bed sores in the mind. Sorry about that, Robin. Yeah.
But is there an F tag for bed rails themselves?
Yeah, let me. I'm trying to.
I'm putting you on the spot. This is like law school.
But it doesn't. Well, it's.
There
it,
is. It'll be, the answer is yes.
Okay, it will be changing, right?
So I'd be happy to follow up with you and give you the F tag. And it won't be changing. It should remain the same. Okay. Yeah.
And Robin, for our listeners, can you explain what an F tag is?
Absolutely. So there are federal nursing home regulations that lay out what facilities have to do, and each of those regulations is given what's called an F tag. And so when the inspectors or the surveyors go in and look at the facility and try to determine or determine if the facility is in compliance, they will write up F tags, and that indicates what regulation was violated. And each, so it is an F tag, and then they all have numbers that go with them. So like F395, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like a shortcut for explaining what the violation was.
I'm sorry?
Is it like a shortcut to explain what the violation was?
For those who know exactly what the F tag is,
right.
It is. for most of us, you know, after a while, if you work with them a lot, you get to know that. So then it becomes a shortcut.
Right.
But when they write up the report, they will write the F tag and they will actually give the full regulation code.
Right.
I got you.
It's kind of like when you hear on the like police dispatch, we got a 1319 over at, you know, over at the high school. We got a code 420 over here.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
10-4, good buddy. Yeah.
There you go. Well, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you might want to talk to our listeners about the dangers of bed rails?
I'm just trying to think. I think the important point, as I think you mentioned at the beginning, is that it is counterintuitive. And that I think it's important to keep in mind what we hear from residents and the negative effects of what can happen, not just physically, but the psychosocial impact. That kind of haunts me because I've heard that residents feel caged in like animals when they have bed rails. Residents often experience, they feel very isolated alone, often see individuals withdraw, become depressed. Because they feel like prisoners, so I think it would have to be a really extraordinary situation for someone to really I think for bed rails to be used, and then always, and you certainly would want to be checking on the individual often and try to reduce them when at all possible. But there are many there are alternatives to their use. And above all, individualized care and staffing
is
a major key.
Well, fantastic, Robin. You've brought a lot of insight for our listeners, and we really appreciate you coming on and sharing that knowledge.
The one last thing I'd just like to add is I hope that, and you may have already said this, but we have a lot of consumer information materials on our website. Which is www.theconsumervoice.org. And we have materials specifically for consumers. We have them for nursing home residents. We have them for family members. We do have materials that are related to physical restraints, which side rails are considered to be physical restraints if they're being used to sort of prevent movement. And we also have information from posted the FDA information about bed safety.
And we're gonna put the information up on the screen for all our viewers about Consumer Voice. But if you want to talk a little bit about Consumer Voice and what you guys do, I'd really appreciate that because you guys really are an amazing organization that is essential to the advocacy of long-term care residents, because there's not a lot of advocates for long-term care residents. I mean, I hate to say it, but CMS is not, you know, always the greatest advocate. And aside from, you know, we have some great ombudsmen around the country. Melanie McNeil is the ombudsman in Georgia. She's
wonderful.
Amazing and passionate. But if you want to talk about what you guys do, please go ahead, because we'd like to get more information out there about Consumer Voice.
Well, thank you very much for the kind words, first of all, and then also for giving me an opportunity just to say a few words, because we find that far too few people know about us. So we are a national organization. Our primary focus is on advocating for, you know, quality of life, quality of care for nursing home residents, folks in assisted living and individuals receiving, you know, long-term services and supports at home. So the whole continuum. And we do public policy work. So we're, you know, on Capitol Hill talking to members of Congress to try to get, you know, good laws passed. Or oppose bad ones. We regularly engage with CMS about regulations. So trying to get the strongest regulations. Right now, we are trying to defend the regulations against being rolled back. And we also work with you know, agencies on policies and practices. And so we're trying to get the best set of policies that we can that really are responsive to the needs of consumers in long-term care settings. So there's that part that's fundamental to our work, but we also are very focused on trying to equip the individual and family members as well to know about long-term care, to know about the options, to know how to select the best option for themselves or the best nursing home, to know what good care looks like, to know what their rights are. You know, in a facility, you really don't, so many people don't know what the facility is, what its responsibilities are, and what we have the right to expect, and the level of care that they have the right to expect. And so we have materials, we try to educate folks about that, and to also help people know how to speak up, to advocate for themselves. So you spoke about the Ombudsman Program. They are wonderful, wonderful advocates out there. But we always hope that people with some information and some support can speak up themselves. And talk to, say, the nursing home administrator to get good care for a loved one or for themselves. The one last thing that we do is we do house the Ombudsman, National Ombudsman Resource Center. So we train and support the ombudsmen that are throughout the country in our communities. So lots of information, lots of written information on our website, and I certainly hope that people will take a look at that and use that information.
And how are you guys funded?
We are funded primarily through grants and private donations.
And people, people can donate if they go to the website, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's always greatly appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah, because you guys are essentially a special interest group that is for the long-term care residents. And the more money that you guys have, the more you can lobby legislation that protects seniors and long-term care residents. Because your opponent in this matter is the nursing home and the healthcare industry that has billions of dollars to do this.
You are so right.
Goliath. It really is David and Goliath. So anybody listening, you can go to Consumer Voice website and donate, and that's something that you absolutely must do.
Thank you so much for that. It does feel very much like David and Goliath, and the nursing home industry is extremely well funded. You're absolutely right. So all donations are always greatly appreciated.
Fantastic. Well, Robin, we really appreciate you coming on, and we look forward to having you on again at some point in the future.
I would love to do, and thank you so much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
You're very welcome.
All right. Thank you, Robin. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye now.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wow, that's a great organization. You could obviously tell that she's extremely passionate.
She's extremely passionate, just like everybody who works for this organization and all the ombudsmen in the country, because they don't take this job for the money. I mean, it's a nonprofit organization, and so they do it because they have a passion for it, and it's a passion for people, unlike the nursing home industry, which has a passion for profit.
I was going to try to segue like we're not profiting by staying on any longer.
Right.
But anyway, we've reached the conclusion of this particular episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. As always, you can watch on our YouTube channel or at nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or you can listen on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, Pound Puppies, whatever you want, however you get your podcasts. And with that, we will see you next time. Thanks for listening. Oh, sorry. I just ruined that. I'm sorry. And with that, we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.